welcome to the 2013 Polycast Christmas Special. I'm Dan Q, and I'm joined by Makalua.
Don't worry, Dan, we'll be putting Christmas music in the final furnished thing of this. And maybe won't get hit by YouTube copyright.
That's the spirit. The Mean Team.
Got question? I am the answer.
And Majin.
Hey, everybody.
From Aaron 90495. Mac, how many cups of coffee are we at so far?
I'm still working on the first one.
So, 0.5, 0.6, what are we talking about here?
Let me look. 0.5, probably.
Aaron doesn't seem to care how many cups of coffee Imagine has had.
No.
And just an interesting email, because Dan has more than one question for this, but one of the things he had was, do you guys and gals think it would be a good idea to need permission to start a trade route? I wish I had more say as to whom was docking their ships in my ports. If I need to slow a civilization down a bit, it really bothers me that I cannot stop their ships from making money off me, which is funding an army which will attack me soon. I don't think you should need a declaration of friendship or anything like that. I do think, however, you should get a pop-up stating so-and-so wants to establish trade route. If you say no, it should be a minor negative in your relationship. Granted, I realize you can just embargo them, but that is a little drastic sometimes. Maybe you don't want to come right out and say I'm now your enemy. You just want to not take part in supporting them, build their nation more. You know, even in multiplayer, that would be nice, because sometimes, you know, there's that one runaway AI, and I don't want to give them any extra money.
Yeah, this is for those situations where you feel like the reciprocal gold and science and maybe even religious pressure is not worth what it is that the trade route's originating civ is receiving and it's worth, whether it's single player or multiplayer. So I think a good solution to this would actually you have to have an embassy in your capital in order to establish a trade route. I mean, it comes early enough with writing. It's not drastic, so no needing a declaration of friendship like Slow mentions. The only thing with that is, though, it should be tied to be able to cancel that embassy at any time after X number of turns, because right now war needs to be declared, and also you don't have any reason to denounce.
Yeah, and most of us have the habit of back and forth and getting mutual embassies at first just so we can see where their capital is. I don't want that to necessarily be permission for them to make trade routes, you know?
You could make a feature that is similar to Open Borders, that it's just for trade routes. In other words, agreements between two civilizations such that they can trade in this way. Or tie it to the Open Borders mechanic if one wishes, although that has some potential problems, whereas a separate thing wouldn't. But I think that would also be a good possibility as well.
Yeah, six half dozen of the other. If you made it with Open Borders, then you would want Open Borders to be earlier in the technology tree, because right now it's at civil service, and that's a little late if you actually really do want trade routes to start to be coming to your civilization.
Well, there's no reason that Open Borders has to be there. You could put Open Borders really anywhere you want, in theory.
Well, you could put the open trade routes thing, say, with maybe horseback riding when you get the caravans through.
Yeah, that would be reasonable. Like, I don't see any major issues with it.
Yeah, that would be earlier, horseback riding, although not as...
Yeah, because you could start out with the city-state routes, and then you research animal husbandry, and then you get the routes with other civs.
So in other words, when you first get to animal husbandry or sailing, both of which give you a trade route, then you would only be able to trade with city-states until such a time as you got horseback riding, and then you could trade with other major civilizations and they could trade with you?
Mm-hmm. Because most of my early trade routes, especially in our multiplayer games, are with other city-states, not other civs, unless we're, you know, all up each other's armpits.
Aw, Mackie likes playing as a city-state.
Very funny. Yeah, city-state is fitness, perhaps.
Personally, I think horseback riding is a little late, and then also saying that you need to be able to get to a certain technology in order to be able to then have your trade routes now, quote-unquote, magically be able to go to other major civilizations as opposed to just city-states?
Well, it wouldn't magically go. It means you would be able to get the open trade route thing, where you could go to the others and say, hey, I'd like to trade with you, do you mind?
Deck with it. Put them all at animal husbandry. Rubber stamp, good go. Good go.
Tech limiting trade between other civs, between the major civs anyways, does sort of fit the historical stuff because a lot of major trading didn't really happen across the globe or between major stuff until diplomacy and all stuff like along that line became more pertinent, which did take time overall. Like there was some approximate technology, whatever.
What technology, Ben? Why would you pick as a key technology to trade between major civilizations?
I'd call it the trading technology. And we'd have to add it in.
Yeah,
add a tech.
Yeah, I was going for something that was already in there. But
that's what I was going for, too. We always have to ask ourselves, if we make this change, like, is it fun? Do we really want to tie the realism that you have to get to a particular technology in order to be able to trade with other major civilizations? I mean, really, it's kind of, you want to be able to trade with a major civilization that you can't reach right now, and even once you get to, say, animal husbandry, then you can get the caravanserie, and you can extend the route and get more gold from it. And I guess you'd need to move a little closer to where they are, or hope they move a little closer to you.
No way, man. They move closer to you, or they're going to attack.
Yeah, move closer.
But there should be some sort of permissible thing. His core concept in there is the permission to start a trade route, and that probably could be in the game. Just because a civ is there doesn't necessarily mean that they want to be trading with you. And that's definitely been pretty big over history. Obviously, you'd need more mechanics and lots of other stuff to go along with it. But not just a straight tech before, poof, hey, we're opening the door just for you.
But that's fun, especially if you can add more techs to the tech tree.
The current situation is just fine, but I wouldn't say it would be a bad thing to add something like that. Make people actually want your trade routes. Maybe you do need good relations. Not to mention, you know, the religious pressure and the tourism and the other stuff along the way. But that's slightly different than going to a certain tech.
From Slow, he's talking about another civilization, like an AI, sending a trade route to him, like getting his permission, which of course then, if you flip it around, it's the same thing.
You can always just denounce them, and that kills the embassy.
That's a little drastic. All you want to do is be able to stop the trade route from happening after you start it, then to actually go and denounce them, that can have greater implications than should be necessary just to end a trade route with them.
Yes. Yes, it could. And tariffs. If we're going to go that far and add that type of mechanic, then we should add tariffs as well.
I agree.
Why do I feel like you want to start like Politicast right now? Whoa, what's going on here?
No, Dan, you don't have to implement these features with historical accuracy. I mean, a lot of the other things in the game aren't, but tariffs could be good, lolly fun in the context of a Civ game.
Yeah, like, you want to send me a trade route where you make 30 off of it and I make a whole 3. Well, I think I want a little money on the side for that. So you're going to send me that trade route, you're going to make 30 off of it, but I might take about half of that.
And here's the thing, you could have civs set how much they make their tariffs, such that there's a bargaining going on, and it could really change the dynamic game to game, depending on how that market turns out.
Yeah.
And then you could probably get into tariff wars.
Yeah.
And then later on in the game, you start having these, you know, free market areas and stuff like that. Could be beneficial relationship-wise.
Or harmful, depending on the leaders.
Yeah.
And yeah, depending on your ideology, people might hate free market.
Yeah, tie it into that. Tie it into the tenets.
There you go.
That would be...
Well, that is certainly within the game already, that if you don't choose a particular ideological tenet, then that, well, it's a diplomatic modifier, whether it's negative or positive, depending upon what you've chosen and what they've chosen. And in a way, you kind of already have a tariff in a way, although it's not that great, because, you know, you do get something for a trade route that somebody establishes with you, just not anywhere near as much, certainly not half.
Yeah. But maybe I don't like you. Maybe I'm willing to allow you to establish trade, but you have to help pay for some stuff. And if it's your only trade route, I have more power in how much you're going to pay me. If you have other choices, I'll have to reduce my tariffs. Otherwise, you'll just go elsewhere.
I don't like you. I don't want you coming into my territory, but your goods and money can. Just toss it over this line.
Yeah, pretty much. How about you just give me your stuff and we'll just call it a day there.
There's some real economics there. I like it. I like it.
See? More mechanics that would not hurt the game.
It would deepen it.
Yeah. And you should be able to embargo, of course, but, you know, embargo without denouncing.
An embargo without having to go through the World Congress.
Yeah. So trade wars.
Because it happens so late.
Yep. Trade wars. Convince other people to embargo somebody.
Now, if you convince someone else to embargo, then there should be a diplo hit of some variety.
Well, there should. Like, if you're embargoing, it's not exactly a, hey, we like you, but keep your stuff to yourself. That tends not to go over well.
Well, there's Aaron's question down here, which is more of a two-part question. So how about part one of that is, what aspect of Civ 5 gameplay, that means no talking about turn times, Phil, do you guys think needs the most improvement? He doesn't know if he himself can narrow it down to one thing, but it would be either the massive imbalance in social policy trees or the fact that tall versus wide isn't much of a decision anymore.
You know what? Trolling me, I will troll you back. Technically, turn times are a part of gameplay. You will not have gameplay without turn times. LOL. But I agree with him from the gameplay standpoint that those two come to mind most immediately to me as well. The social policy balance, not just that, but, well, I guess he does mention tradition, yeah. So your openers and your late social policy choices are a little bit guided. And, yeah, the whole tall versus wide thing, of course, as a player of all the previous Civs, I kind of miss the sprawling empires, even though that does have some implications on turn times.
Yeah, it's because of that add-up, the extra 10% per city, that sometimes it's a little better to go the other way. I mean,
eventually. In terms of areas that need the most improvement that would likely be realized by most of the audience, and by audience I mean Civilization V, not necessarily this show.
Yeah.
But if I'm just talking about needs the most improvement in general, multiplayer.
No, Jan, you can't.
Yes, that would be nice.
That whole thing.
That whole thing of out of sync. Yeah.
Ooh. We all love the Oost beatbox, but you know, too much of anything, even a good thing, is still too much by definition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just lots of random small stuff that needs improvement. Like, and then
he's asking what most
benefit
improvements, though, not everything that needs improvement of some capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine just choose one.
No,
choose your favorite.
I don't want to.
Imagine doesn't play well with others.
Exactly.
Apparently not. So that's why we have to spawn them near Dan.
Hell, the tech tree itself actually needs the most improvement, I think. It's way too linear and not very well worked out. Like, when you have exactly one, maybe two slightly different tech paths through the tech tree per game, yeah, I think that might be needing some hefty amount of improvement, because that would help offset other problems.
As long as you actually get tough choices and not honor versus tradition type choices, yes.
Yeah, that would be my pick. I know it's been that way for years and years and games, but you know what? Sometimes you have to actually change things to make them better.
Perhaps.
You know what else has been in Civ games for a while now that needs help? Multiplayer.
Are we going to have to relive the moment from a previous Christmas special thing where I had to sing a version of Santa Baby, which was like, fix the MP for me, please?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mackie
walks into it.
Yep.
Balance, another email from Slow. Can you guys please explain why giving bombers the ability to pillage is such a balancing problem? All your units fight at less than full strength, LOL.
Keep going.
Keep going.
Obviously, bombing the infrastructure of your enemy played a major role in past wars and is something I feel is missing from the game. I've posted this question before on Civ Fanatics, and everyone always tells me that would be unbalancing for them to have this ability. I feel simply putting AA on oil sources and such, plus making the chance for success of the attack a dice roll, would keep the balancing issue at bay, give you more decisions to make with your bombers, and force you to protect your oil and roads better. Obviously, this pillaging act would not improve the bomber's health as well. I really feel that bombers being able to pillage complies with the basic rock, paper, scissor, super-size scissor that crushes rock theory behind most strategy games, and don't understand personally why they would be too overpowering if they had this capability. I added that super scissors part. That wasn't part of his original post.
Okay.
Whoops. My bad.
Okay, so Phil, what do you really think about it?
I think it would be lulzy.
Would you care to explain your definition of lulzy further? The rest of us that speak English?
No.
Shortest polycast ever. Lol. No.
Well, bombers are already kind of good.
I am kind of come down on the side of, yes, they should be able to do that.
Facepalm.
Whoa, wait a minute. Imagine's going to agree with me? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
We can't agree. We have to argue more, Imagine, like on the last episode.
Okay.
We were told we had to do that.
Yeah, okay. But yes, I think Bomber should be able to pillage tiles and stuff, or at least make an attack on a tile and potentially dice roll it, depending on promotions, stuff like that, and if they get intercepted, i.e. if they get intercepted, they cannot pillage. So you'd have to actually use fighters to get rid of all those anti-aircraft shots before the bombers come in, and that means more use for other things already in the game. Plus, I don't think bombers should be as powerful as they are anyways with the ranged attack, especially the World War I bombers. There's no way a World War I bomber could ever keep up to, say, a tank and catch up to it and actually hit it effectively because, you know, the thing moves. It's like, hey, look, it's a bomber. It's going really slow. I guess I'll step over here. They were great at things that didn't move, which would bring in the whole pillaging side of things. So they could go attack an oil rig somewhere. It doesn't move, and it has a pretty good shot of hitting it. But I'd also, you know, reduce the bomber's combat strength by half when trying to attack something.
Okay. Well, I wasn't thinking in terms of otherwise modifying the unit. If you're going to do that, then I would actually agree with you. Because then you would have such a ridiculous, ridiculous unit overall. But, you know, I still do fear the poor AI and its weakness of resisting these kinds of tactics. And then it's stuck fighting with basically any unit that has a strategic resource attached to it being kind of junky because it got pillaged so easily.
Yeah, but that's why putting AA on defending your territory, actually having to build AA, maybe?
Yeah, well, okay, and in multiplayer, that would probably be done pretty well, assuming you got that far in the game without the outcome being decided, or going a boost.
And then you might be able to use artillery and tanks. Things have to move on the battlefield.
You might be able to use.
Yeah. And to add to all of this support for the ability, now that cities are limited to a maximum of 6 air units, or 10 if you get the later and somewhat costly airport to get you to 10, it's not going to be like, okay, I'm just going to put in all of these air units in this city because I want to be able to be within interception in order to be able to, say, pillage the one source of uranium they have. Haha, no more nukes for you. What's that? You're going to intercept me. You have a fighter. Oh, they've only got a chance to intercept once on a turn, so I'm just going to put in the 20 or 30, whatever I have, and just go boom, 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 because on a dice roll, I'm eventually going to get it. Well, now with that maximum number of air units, combined with the fact that if the AI, could we always come back to, can the AI do this well too? Okay. I know that's another consideration, but I'm also in agreement with this because you might now have to think of, you know, rather than just having bombers in my cities, which in my case is more often than not, very rarely do I feel I need to have a fighter. Another reason to actually have a fighter in there because, they might be able to actually bomb this important strategic resource and it's on the border of this enemy and I want to increase the likelihood that it's going to be intercepted. Plus, as was also being said, I might actually have a reason to start building, like, anti-aircraft tanks and then placing them in particular places on the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and fighters do have a promotion to give you 2 intercepts.
I mean, I guess you could have 6 fighters in there, and then you could have, you know, the potential of 12 possibilities for interception, but still, you wouldn't want to just rely then on fighters in order to be able to potentially intercepting that bomber coming in. You would actually want...
Oh, you'd still want AA. I'd make AA for tileable and get bonuses to interceptions based on that. Basically, can it happen? Yes. Can it be balanced? Yes.
Well, you have to rework the unit.
Well, actually, that's not really that hard, because, I mean...
I was thinking this clearly in terms of bombers in their current state, and then just adding that ability on top, and I'm like, no way. But yeah, if you make it more reasonable, then it can be, I would argue, as you guys are, then a deeper approach than what we see currently.
Aaron's other question, do we think Firaxis should make one more expansion? I know we've never seen 3 expansions before, but with technology advancing slower and Civ's massive popularity, I think this could be the first time it's logical to make a 3rd expansion. I don't think there needs to be more complexity, but a few more gameplay elements. I think we've already been talking about, like, there is plenty of things that can be done, even new mechanics, like the whole trade route embargoing. Something that hasn't been talked about, but earlier up in the thread, there is other options for expandable things. But is there potential for a third expansion? I don't know. There's room for improvement in the game, and they probably could come up with a lot of different stuff. Not sure it'd be a coherent expansion, though. There'd just be a lot of updates and changes, and then people would whine and complain that we're paying for gameplay elements that don't really expand the game, but make it better and fix it. So.
Bring back corporations while you're at it. Bring back Vassal States.
No.
Okay, now in fairness to Aaron 90495, he did say, such as the return of corporations in a better form, yes. He did qualify it.
He did dare say Vassal State, so I'm thankful for that.
Though quite honestly, I think the changes to the trade route system courtesy of Brave New World, both internal and external trade routes for like food and production and gold respectively, that to me that kind of abstractly incorporates corporations.
Yeah, you could continue that plan and make it a little better and have over time some AI take care of your trading and you get some different benefits out of it than they do in law.
I'm sure there are things we could think of that would be discrete new mechanics that would be added as a new expansion. But it would be nice to see a lot of the other tweaks added as well if that were to be done.
Yeah.
I guess it would be more of a little tweaks expansion because I think if they tried to have another big system in there, where the hell's the room on the UI at this point?
Well, that's the thing. Some things would have to change. And they'd probably have to change the UI to be more useful.
So are we saying here that Mackie, Phil, and Madgen, you'd all be in favor of another expansion in some form or another? Is that what you're saying?
Depends on what it adds, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at least the effort towards another expansion.
Is there really any downside to that from our perspective, Dan?
Yeah.
More content! More is not better. I don't think there should be another expansion for Civ 5. No,
it's fine. Just go straight to Civ 6. Whatever.
Yeah, fine. You skip it. We'll talk about it, and then you can't talk about it on your own show.
Should there be future patches? Yes. That's where we can get into the tweaks of some gameplay balance issues that we have not talked about so far on this special. But a future expansion? No.
Well, okay. Balance changes should be patches, but things like completely altering the tech tree would probably be better served as some kind of expansion or DLC. You are changing the game drastically at that point.
Really going after the technology tree to like make it not so linear? That's for Civilization VI. That is not an appropriate place for an expansion to me.
What?
Given the game's development, no.
Why not?
No.
There's even precedent. Civ 4 changed its tech tree quite a bit between vanilla and BTS. There's no reason Civ 5 couldn't do that if they wanted to do that.
Yeah.
There's also been changes to Civ 5's technology tree since vanilla.
Oh, they did.
There you go. Even more precedent. Way to prove me more right.
No, I'm saying it's already been done. Been there, done that.
Could be done further. Absolutely.
No.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can say yep all you want. It doesn't make your argument any more valid, I'll tell you what.
Yep.
The three of us it does.
Well, good for you.
Not only are you outvoted, logical fallacy number one, but you are just stating what your preferences are, Dan. You are not giving objective, logical reasons for why this could not be implemented into Civilization V. And that, my friend, is why you have been defeated.
No. The question was, could Firaxis make one more expansion?
Yes. Well, obviously they could.
You said no.
The question was, I'm saying no.
You said no.
Hey, Internet, you wanted us to disagree more.
Yeah.
Learn from Civilization V, balance, patched, so that we can get it to better what it should be realized, but let's not add any more. We're going to be adding the kitchen sink now. And a retweaking? No, just leave it be. Carl 5872. It seems to be the general consensus that tradition is the best of the four social policy openers out there. While there is a guide out there for it, I haven't found much on how to use the other three. Would you experts be able to maybe explain what Civ and strategy you would use if you had to start with each of liberty, honor, and piety? And before I let somebody else jump in, let me just say a qualification is that there is no had. You do not have to start with any one of these policies, whether you're any particular civilization or any particular strategy. That's the nice thing about Civ. There is no you have to.
No, his point is, if you picked one of these, what would you use? Not, I don't have to pick one of those, so I'll just keep going tradition with every Civ. Mwahaha! Ignore your question.
Okay, I got this. Honor. You always start honor with no exceptions because honor is the greatest policy ever. LOL. No. But if you do want to use it, I would recommend playing a dual map and rushing somebody to death.
Okay, let's take each of these individually and we'll spitball for each. Let's start with piety. If you were going to start with a pure piety start, what civ and what strategy would you use?
Probably Ethiopia, because every time we're in multiplayer in Ethiopia, we're all like, well, crap, we're not getting the religion first. They have a different monument replacement.
Ooh.
So they're going to build that everywhere. They're going to get a bunch of religion from that everywhere.
Would you go major growth bonuses from religion to counteract the tradition? Would you just spammy wider so that you can have more steals and therefore more faith and therefore spend more money on faith buildings? Or
Is this one of those depends on the map kind of things? Because if you've got an area where you could grow, then you could go for growth. But if you get a plain start, you might as well spam cities. It's going to suck anyway.
Would you go for Messiah type thing where you just plant mass great people?
I do that anyway, normally. Forget all your religious buildings. Holy site, holy site, holy site, holy site, holy site. By the way, there's a holy site. Mm-hmm.
Yes, with Messiah, where you create profits are cheaper, as in you don't have to have as much base accumulation in order to get the next one. Yes, Mackie, stop taking that from me. Multiplayer, thank you.
No.
Come on, Mackie, it can be my Christmas present.
So you can do that. Of course, what are you going to do with all that faith? You get to spend it on holy warriors.
Well, if you're going up the piety tree anyway, then you take the... What's, Dan, your favorite thing?
Are you talking about Jesuit education?
Thank you.
So you're going to reform!
Uh-huh. Or if that's already taken, you can go for Glory of God one. Buy specialists like crazy.
Before you get to purchase great person of any type. Once you start entering the industry. Aaron 90495 says in the chat, Messiah plus Sweden equals win.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be obnoxious.
Just the gifting of great people to city-states. Yeah, what's that influence? Is that plus 50?
90.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I'm right. It would be obnoxious. Unless I was playing it, it would be awesome.
Yep. So to continue on the plan, piety is also one usually associated with Theodora and the Byzantiums.
Oh, would this be because the extra belief you get to choose when you found a religion?
Mm.
Yay.
So again, probably a Messiah plan, but the ability to go for that extra belief and going with piety and then also reforming. A lot of people tend to like taking all the buildings right off the mark, then going super wide with all of that extra tourism per religious building and just making it mass tourism per city with those. Others can do piety starts, but you sort of have to mass faith very, very quickly.
Mackie talked about a map earlier with Ethiopia going like tall versus wide, for example. I don't know if you have a certain natural wonder near you, Mount Sinai, say anyone?
Yeah, there's a few, actually. But yes, we all know Phil loves honor.
Attila the Hun, the Hun, the Hun, Attila the Hun, you're done.
Yep. Any of the early rushers could go honor. And the whole point behind honor is not to build an empire, but it's to take an empire. And since you're taking honor early, you should go out there and make sure that you do it. And so obviously some civs are better at going honor start earlier than others.
Assyria might be fun for that too.
Yep.
Mongolia, if you got city-states near you.
Well, anybody if you have city-states near you. Although, everybody's going to get mad.
Well, yeah, I mean Mongolia more because the plus 30%
yeah.
Strength attack up.
It's not a sustained long-term super strategy, though. So you might want to, like, end the game with the units you're using or not too far from them.
You could still do it.
Oh, you can do it. But, I mean, if you're talking about optimal situations in which to use honor over alternatives.
Yeah, kill everybody. Or just go take their stuff. I mean, other people like building wonders. And if you use your units that are boosted with honor to go take their cities that have those wonders, then they are the ones who spent all that effort on the wrong thing.
Yeah, if you can take them.
Canis Albinus puts in the chat, Shaka, the Zulu. 50% less maintenance on melee units, but of course all units also receive 25% more experience from combat. Germany as well, because you pay 25% less for land unit maintenance. There's also this possibility that barbarian units you kill inside an encampment will join your empire plus 25 gold. But actually, when I think of honor, I think of both the Celts and the Aztecs.
Even Persia could work. Immortal. Immortal. Immortal.
What I like to do in most of my games is I take a combination of both tradition and piety. with the Aztecs, it's like, okay, if you get the tradition opener, plus three culture in the capital, and then the Aztecs gain culture for the empire for each enemy unit killed from their unique ability, and then if you adopt the honor over policy, then you get even more culture, although this is for just barbarians being killed, but often in the early game, barbarians are probably the ones you're going to be fighting, unless you disable them. Grr.
Grr.
These two things stack. And with the Celts' unique unit, the Pictish Warrior, earning 50% of opponent's strength as piece for kills, the Honor Opener stacks with this too, and actually, hey, Piety might also be advantageous. Tie it back to Piety too, because there's... I can't believe I'm going to use this word, even though it pains me. There's actually synergy. Oh.
No!
I use the word because people know what it means. I'm not advocating the use of it, but I'm going to use it to my advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really what this question is all about, right?
Yeah.
Using starting situations to your advantage.
And that's the point.
The earlier you use your advantages, the better.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's the thing. If you go honor and you don't attack anybody, then yes, it's a bad player.
Yeah.
You went wrong. And of course, Liberty, hyper expansion, obviously. Mayans, usually good at that. You can do Babylon and double Academy before you hit education. Hmm.
Great scientist right away from writing.
I mean, obviously, the ICSE style is not great anymore, or good. It's starting to push on the crap level, but Liberty is not just about ICSing. You can use Liberty to spam out there 5, 6, 7, 8 cities and get more than the tradition 4 city style, and do just fine, even building those cities taller. Keep in mind that you get extra culture per city, you get faster workers, so they improve all those areas faster and get them up better. You get that free golden age. And the reduced culture costs, which you can't get in tradition, which means that you can definitely afford some more social policies, even though you're expanding. And then there's that free great person just kind of does a lot of good stuff in there. And there's extra production per city and blah, blah, blah. So there's extra stuff per city, which you don't get in tradition except for the food bit. Liberty is still a viable alternative to tradition, provided you actually expand. And that's actually part of the problem is, especially at higher difficulty levels, clearing out National College quickly is usually an important thing. Otherwise, you're going to start falling behind. But definitely on higher difficulty levels, the AIs will fill in the spaces a lot faster than they will on lower difficulty levels with their own cities. So if you're going Liberty, you need to expand early. And again, that's the point. Expand early, take up all the space, and then sit back and build up versus tradition where you just want to try and build up and eventually do something else.
Well, hey, we have more of an email from Slow. He was wondering if we felt that Civ would ever go more grand strategy. Well, he thinks Civ is the best game out there, hands down, as a PM. He's also left looking for more depth, like Victoria 2's economy, or Hearts of Iron supply issues, or EU's weather, and how it affects troops and things. Is there room in Civ for that, or is this getting too much?
When you pick a game, you have to pick some form of scope, of level. You do sacrifice some things that are outside the scope of the game's design. For example, having weather be a significant effect in a game with a 40-year turn rollover doesn't make a lot of sense. There are no hurricanes for 40 years or earthquakes for 7 or 10 years. It just doesn't happen that way.
Yeah, and the other
one's Beamer.
To week.
Blasphemer.
Oh, what's that? You don't want the random events with hurricanes and earthquakes back? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, you hear that correctly, Mackie. It's worth pointing out that some of these things are expressed abstractly in the context of Civ turn times. Or in this case, if by turn times, I mean, okay, how much time passes each time you hit end turn? Is it 40 years, 5 years, whatever? But you represent some of these events through the terrain or through what you're getting from cities, whatever. You could argue that over time those things have averaged out in gameplay because of how much time does pass in every turn.
Although I wouldn't call weather grand strategy.
Well, this is one of those examples. But you know, the supply issues, we've talked about that before in the realism versus fun category. And while it would be more realistic for supply issues, it
doesn't fit a game with on such a scale.
Yeah. You have to balance out what it is versus what could be added. So could there be more grand strategy as in make AIs have a reason to go to war and force them to use those reasons and therefore have everybody else act related to that, which is more of the grand strategy CB system? Yes, that could easily be added into Civ with some, you know, modifications, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, could the economy side be improved to this degree where there's more refinement And I think that's more of where the question is. It's not grand strategy. It's more, can you get more refinement into the game so that little things matter a bit more? For some things, definitely, yes.
Yeah.
Other things, yeah, it just doesn't make sense because turn times. I mean, the whole point behind weather and other stuff like that is it's an RTS style, not a TBS style. So like with EU, weather matters because you have day by day, by month, and therefore you have seasons. You can't do that in a turn-based game, not like this. I think kind of a question he wants to get into is further down in the email is he starts questioning learning curves.
Oh, yeah.
Unenjoyable. The learning curve only matters until you learn. After that, if you have such a tiny learning curve and everybody gets up that learning curve, well, you're going to have a very simple game. And everybody's eventually going to get bored of it. Unless, well, it's a casual market that they're looking for. Then, sure, you're going to have casual players, but you won't have people really want to play it after a couple more times, unless they're purposely staying casual. So I would definitely vote for more depth. Absolutely, more complexity and more depth, as long as it fits the game, to make it more interesting for players.
No, I think about it. We kind of do have supply issues in the game with the strategic resources.
Yeah, and that's been recently fixed so that it's related to that. There's also supply issues, as in if you have too many units, then...
Mm-hmm.
And I'll point out that that is a more abstract representation, and at the same time, more appropriate in Civ. Like, it's not how iron really works. You don't just have a mine for it, and then suddenly it's distributed everywhere in your empire, and it's finite, but only a rate finite. It never disappears. Like, that's just not how things work in real life, but it makes sense in Civ.
Yeah, because again, it's not over time that you're digging stuff out.
Yeah.
Could there be more of a supply length, like distance of supply? So you have an iron mine here in this city, but to, you know, repair that unit that's halfway around the planet, that might require some more tech and other supply management.
Yeah, like maybe you can repair that unit or build those units on the same continent as the iron mine, but if you get offshore, you have to have a harbor or something.
Yeah, you have to be able to find some way to ship the iron over to the other continent, which would require probably city connections.
But I like ancient era resource teleportation.
Yeah, that's the sort of stuff that could be added to provide more complexity to the game. Not sure if it would have more fun.
You would have to fill that one specific city near the iron mines to build your iron units. Or
you just pillage enemy tiles.
Or to be able to transfer the iron to other cities. So if you connect it, then you know you have your iron mine there, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to build your iron units at the same place that you're going to mine it. And then there comes into the question of, okay, so do strategic resource units, are they allowed to heal, i.e. fix themselves, if they're outside of supply range?
Mm-hmm.
That could be a good reason to make them stronger in general, but then obviously weaker if they're out of range.
Yeah, let's see them make an AI that can handle that.
Well, okay, there's other problems along that
line,
too. In theory, it can be done.
Yeah.
But at some point, you're going to get away from the core feeling, the core what is Civ, if you push it too far one way or another.
Mascot says, since the developers do speak through the podcast, I thought I could lay down some new ideas. Well, you can always lay down new ideas through this show, whether or not the developers do speak through the podcast. But yes, what you've said is true. I'm going to skip the first option just for a moment. Go to the second one.
Skips over the first point, too.
Not skipping. I'm coming back to it.
Tabled indefinitely.
Conquest of the New World scenario updated for Gods and Kings and Brave New World.
Nah.
In one sense I'm thinking, okay, because there already is that scenario, but is it going to be more work to actually update it for Gods and Kings and Brave New World, or is it just going to be less time in order to have like a new civilization, either from quote-unquote nothing, or say a civilization that was with Gods and Kings, and then you upgrade it to Brave New World? But quite frankly, I think this is a low priority because I don't play scenarios, and I think most people who play Civ also don't play scenarios. It's probably also why we still have multiplayer issues, because we are a small subset of those who play the game. So let's go back to his actual first point. Saboteurs, third espionage agent, useful when having a wonder race. It in some ways can cause riots. Are you suggesting that you have a chance to disrupt or perhaps even destroy wonder production in a city using a spy? Do not do that.
That would be hilarious. I approve this suggestion just because of its potential.
To annoy Dan.
What? Dan was building a wonder? No, he wasn't.
Well, he was building a wonder, but now he's 100 hammers behind.
You know, when having a wonder race, you know what's useful when you have a wonder race? Is to first off know that you're in a wonder race because you know that someone else is constructing it, and you push more production through your city. That's how you play the wonder race. That is actually fun. Okay, it's not fun if you lose, but...
Or you hurry up and get that great engineer.
Or you can just walk over and pillage all their production tiles.
Oh, that would be the best. He uses the great engineer to rush it, and then it gets sabotaged. This has to be done, if only to troll Dan.
Don't forget causing riots, because I'm sure somebody somewhere will riot.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he means in-game or out-of-game, because I think it applies in both cases.
Yeah, probably.
As for causing riots, I'm envisioning, of course, that you've got a spy in a city, and then at a certain point in time, you can say, okay, cause a riot. Whatever that happens to me, I don't know if it's just that in the city or it's the empire-wide. But I think you can cause quote-unquote riots in other ways already in the game. Pillage luxury resources. Work through World Congress to get a civilization embargoed. Use tourism pressure to force a civilization under a different ideology into your own.
Yeah, I was going to say, what kind of riots do you mean? It's not like in Civ 4 where that actually shut down the city production if they were unhappy.
Hey, it could be a riot as in, hey, look, you're unhappy and you're at the point where you're going to get rebels spawning, so I'm going to use my saboteur to make sure the rebels show up in this particular city and therefore focus where those rebels are going to pop out anyways. Eh? Eh?
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Doesn't mess with anything, but is still part of the game mechanic.
You can make additional rebels spawn in doing so as well. On top
can
of
I
it.
Use this saboteur to mysteriously pillage a bunch of your luxuries while I'm at it?
No, that's what the barbs are for. They'll do it for you.
And then the final part of Mascot's inquiry was number 3. Following this concept, and that's the concept being from Conquest of the World, the Age of Exploration could be made more complex in the base game as well, like introducing colonies. Colonies, unlike cities, need to be supported with trade routes constantly, have specialized production buildings, need to be established in a colonial age in other continents. The benefits for having colonies can be ultimately a diplomatic victory vote, which means city-state votes need to be nerfed. Base for religion spread can be annexed with ideologies, also depends on revolt risk as well that can lead to independence. Obviously, this isn't perfect, but I would love to have colonies. In the end, World Congress aside, diplomatic victory still the same, hogging city-state vote deals, so there is room for improvement. We have talked about colonies, I'm pretty sure, earlier this year as part of another discussion where we talked about it being kind of like was in Civilization 3, but by colonies being tied to a diplomatic victory vote, I'm not saying we couldn't do something with city-state votes through a diplomatic victory in World Congress and then the United Nations, but I don't think colonies should have a basis for a diplomatic victory vote because they're an extension of an empire. Of course they would vote for their master.
But what happens if you have less city-states on the map to begin with and these colonies become city-states later rather than part of your empire, unless you do something specific to actually soak them in which case they don't get votes?
So then the colonies over time, assuming you're protecting them while they're maturing into a city-state, and then they have a considerable amount of influence with you from the outset, like they're instant allies and some influence that you can then use towards a diplomatic victory?
Something like that. Why not?
Hmm.
And then if you screw up, they go away. But if you keep them friendly for long enough, they just become part of your empire instead. And then they lose their vote.
And I'm assuming it would be evidently labeled through the user face that this happens to be a colony, and so in which case you might want to do something about that if they're your opponent. Yeah, I could see that.
Mm.
Like, I don't have a problem with it. It's a concept, but there need to be a lot of things carefully considered in implementing it. But I don't mind.
You know what?
It.
That's an expansion work.
Yeah. I think that would be the perfect venue for an expansion to have new features along these lines.
And I think that would be a perfect avenue for Civilization 6. We already have city states in the game. Arrgh!
Sam just wants Civ 6 to come sooner.
I didn't say sooner or later. Lucky Strike 77. I'd like to see a discussion. Well, no, you're not going to get it next. No, okay.
You can't watch a discussion.
That's true. I'd like to see a discussion about the greatest game breaker for me in multiplayer, the culture bomb ability of the great General Citadel. In my opinion, it makes warfare a lot more boring, frustrating, and straightforward, brainless. The introduction of pillage and healing was more than enough of a boost to offensive warfare. I'd also want to point out that the military-grade persons don't need to be balanced out in usefulness to the ones owned by being specialists in cities. They are grown totally differently and therefore can be very different in usefulness. For me, making a Citadel without the culture bomb effect, plus the bonuses of the general otherwise, is more than enough. And last point, can't see how offensive Citadels, as I call them, can serve single player either. Can't see anything else than lots of abusive possibilities for the human player that can't be copied or countered by the artificial intelligence.
I've seen the AI troll pretty accurately with the Citadels.
Yeah?
I've watched AIs drop Citadels and take lands and luxuries and stuff like that, which is an appropriate use of them. I've seen that.
Yes, the AI does actually know how to use them somewhat. It can't quite do the thing with the player where you punch through a line straight to their capital that they can't siege in very easily. But has he been trolled by multiplayer or single player too much?
No, it's probably because if you play as multiplayer against other humans, obviously, use of the Great General culture bomb thing, if multiple people are getting Great Generals to pumped out, yeah, you can end up with some, like, goofy maps where you have citadel after citadel after citadel, and you're fighting to take lands back and forth, and you get massive lines of citadels, and whoever happens to own the citadels gets lots of damage done. Yeah, in multiplayer, if there's a lot of Great Generals being pumped out, yes, it could be painful, but eh.
Kind of, you know, if you see that's the way the game is going, then you could just try to convince the other person, like, let's call it and have it be a draw. Like, what's the point of it?
Or just drop a nuke on their head.
Yeah, or you try to circumvent it in that way, or you try to prevent it from happening in the first place. Of course, you start taking cities of another civilization, then okay, you know, borders are going to be touching because you've just taken territory of theirs. It's now yours, and they've got more territory adjacent. But if you see someone, like, moving up with a settler to get, like, really, really, really close to you, maybe you want to do something about that before they have the chance to move in the Great General and actually citadel that spot.
Or drop a nuke on.
Wow, Phil, your impression of Mad Jin, his voice, is really good. I hear you talking about nukes, okay? I know you think you're Mad Jin, but you're actually Phil. Now you can't. No, you're not fooling me, I tell you what.
Happiness is a warm nuke. That's something we should all have in mind across the holidays.
And as for, like, the culture that is taken from a citadel, like, in terms of total territory, maybe this is just my Civilization 4 bias, but it is not a bomb. on the scale.
Dan, you are bringing back one of my favorite memories.
Yeah, we're talking about the one tile you put the actual citadel on and the ring of tiles running around it. It's not that bad, really.
They're hexes anyway.
Can be annoying as all get out, but...
Oh, yeah. But
all of you, get out of my land.
Not just level of culture bonding Civ 4.
You no longer have access to your strategic resource, so your units attempting to retake this are weaker. Have fun.
Yeah, that too.
Or hey, this spot that you just put a city by that you were going to expand your tiles over? Nope, don't think so.
Well, if you're relying on a strategic resource, still, that's like right on the border with somebody, either right at the outset or through war, you realize, man, they're getting closer and closer to it, then maybe you don't want to be able to have to rely on that unit so much or try to find another source of it.
Or just kill them before they get there.
Or that too.
See?
Perfectly fair and balanced. Indeed.
It is!
Sometimes you don't want to start an early war, but if that settler or great general is getting a little too close, welp.
Beat him.
Yeah, there's nothing to say that when you start an early war that you have to finish the war early either. It's just, reduce their opportunity.
All right, Colonel Mustard, I will read your post. I can't believe it's time for the Christmas special already. Dan, Mackie, Phil, and Majin, thanks again for another great year of Civ Entertainment. Why, you are welcome. We are always glad to please. Along with Paul's question, I am curious to hear some mid and late game strategy. What do some of your early game decisions afford you down the road? And what are some ways you are finding effective to adapt when your plans meet troubles later on in the game? Well, my answer to this is bombers and nukes.
And what's your answer to the first question?
Bombers and nukes.
That's early game, though. Unless you're an advanced start person.
Well, you're talking about
having... Force the opener into bombers and nukes.
Yeah.
It is true. Tradition for city opener into bombers to nukes. Yes. Can do that.
We We were talking earlier about faith-based strategy things, and I've had a game before where I had started out that way, but I ended up going science in the end because I had taken For the Glory of God, and I could just sit there and buy more science. But you could also do that to buy a bunch of great artists and great musicians and whatever and go super culture, too.
Kind of like going a couple hundred faith per turn and buying all these great musicians at the end.
Or buying a bunch of great artists and keeping in a perpetual golden age for a while. And you wouldn't think that faith would branch off so easily into the other victory, but yeah, kind of does. And then you've also got the things of divine inspiration where each wonder gives you more faith. It just gets a little ridiculous after a while. Oh, it's a fun game.
Well, for me, like early game decisions, growth and science. Because, hey, if you're able to grow, then you're able to increase your science. And if you are able to increase your science, then you're going to be able to continue to grow because you're going to be able to build an empire and or take empires and not get wiped off the planet.
In other words, Dan is advocating a four-city opener into bombers and nukes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, see, the thing is, it's not as restrictive as it used to be with whatever you do in the early game, not branching into what you want to do mid or late game. You actually have more opportunity to change your strategy now than you used to.
Only by a little bit, though.
And the higher difficulty level you get, of course, the more it's going to lean towards you're just going to have to conquer everything.
From Eric24, that's A-R-I-K-24. At what point in time do you guys expect Firaxis to make Civ 5 as a complete version like they did with Civilization 3?
Well, 5 years from now.
I'm not sure it'll happen because of the DLC model on Steam. I think that they will just have their package deals now and then. And like a complete edition, maybe they might package it together, but it won't, I don't know.
They already have the precedent for doing that.
Yeah.
They did the Game of Cure edition in September 2011 that included most previously released DLC. Then there was the Gold edition in February that included all of the DLC.
Yeah.
So, yeah, cool. We'll get a Platinum or Ultimate edition eventually once they decide they're done with DLC.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or whatever.
It is true that, yes, Civ 3 had two expansions, and so did Civ 4. But the DLC thing, I mean, yeah, who knows, because the timing, if you go through when you reviewed the release dates of the base game and the expansions and the game of the year and or gold and or complete and or please give us more money for the same thing edition, no, I would not. Is that an editorialization? No.
Nope.
Actually, I could see, based on all of this, a Civilization 5 complete coming in July 2015 if we take the assumption that Brave New World was the final expansion pack, and that would be 2 years later. Because before you have the Civilization Complete Edition, we would now need Civilization 5, well, like Mackie said, Platinum Edition, because we've already had Gold Edition. Gold was released earlier this year. But Gold Edition does not include Brave New World because Brave New World hadn't been released yet, so obviously we have to have the Platinum Edition. And then we have to have the Special Platinum Edition, which includes commentary from developers and publishers about what they were thinking. Yeah, you know where I'm going.
Uh-huh.
Well, whatever. My point is that it's not the same as back when it had to come on a CD and was like, restricted. You can just buy more really readily now.
You know, children born today, I bet that's something they probably won't understand. What is a CD? God.
What do you mean I just can't download it?
I thought it was a, you know,
they probably won't
thing.
Say that, Mackie, because you can.
Yeah, I know.
You can download some really obscure games from, like, the Nintendo era, potentially, and it's ridiculous. Some really esoteric stuff. It's actually pretty good, by the way.
I bet you if you showed some future generations a picture of a CD, they'd be like, is that like a Frisbee for a little dog?
Is that those records I heard about?
I'd like more Imagine YouTube videos with Dan Q as co-commentator.
Fight between you two. They want to see a throwdown.
No, Lucky Strike 77. He loves it when Dan Q is joining Beyond the Monument, for instance. Can we perhaps have some more great guest visits in 2014?
It's possible. Thing is, Imagine decided to switch recordings to Wednesdays instead of Saturdays, and that's like totally not good for me.
Totally?
But it's possible. It's possible. We'll see.
His best suggestion is Civ 5 multiplayer game between the two of us, Pangea, standard map, default settings, 6 AIs on Immortal or Deity, and we have to LP it.
Fight, 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 fight.
Oh, and then he actually expended it, perhaps all 4 of us and 4 AIs. Although, what do you say lads and ladettes? So, is Phil switching teams again?
Well, I was thinking about which of us would work or steal Dan Keel. I don't know if that counts as switching teams.
Just Dan.
I think the only fair way to do this is to have it be a race so that we can all line up outside of Dan's capital and try to nick his worker, and wherever he happens to put it, that's who gets his worker.
Goal for the day is see how many workers we can steal from Dan.
Wait. In other words, you're going to treat me like a city-state.
That would be a kind of poetic justice.
Exactly. This is city-state revenge. Not that abuse you give them.
Competitive multiplayer. In all seriousness, I would count myself out of that. Competitive multiplayer, I just don't find it fun. I mean, I find it fun to talk about, but to not actually do.
What we can do is make Dan host the stream, and he gets to be the commentator and look at what everybody's doing.
Well, and to tie it back to Beyond the Monument, I have color commentated what Imagine was doing on the screen before, and some people seem to like that. Other people not, but I don't care what those other people think.
During the critical elements of such a stream, I would cut off my video feed, and so Dan could only comment on what my opponent is doing, and then abuse the information troll.
Well, there is an observer mode in multiplayer, so he can just be in that and see everything.
Man, that's cheating. Don't cheat.
Then I could be like, Mackie, do more of that. Phil, stop doing that. Imagine, I have no idea what the hell you're doing.
So, business as usual then, about not knowing what the hell Imagine's doing?
Yeah, pretty much.
He's spamming more wonders in his corner of the world.
So will Dan Q ever rejoin Beyond the Monument? I don't know. Can we get him to stop saying the polycast.net every 3 seconds? Maybe.
No.
I don't know why I would have to keep on mentioning the polycast.net when everybody's homepage is already the polycast.net, still the polycast.net. And
.net.
Poly.
Fine, I'll talk about the polycast.com in the future then, which I also have. So then you can go, okay. From the chat, Canis Albinus has a few questions. I think these should be kind of rapid fire.
Okay, ready? Canis, question number one. Why do you hate India so much?
Because it's the ultimate ICS sin.
No, he doesn't say that.
Oh, he says, what does each co-host most loathe civilization when they see it again?
Oh, well then say the question that you're answering. I thought you were making up a question in this person's name.
Well, he didn't specifically ask that, but I guess maybe it's because India really doesn't hit a stride until later in the game, and most of the time we're not playing that long of a game in multiplayer. In a single player, I would probably roll with it if I was doing random, but in multiplayer, it's like, I need something with a little more oomph.
Most loathed civilization.
Shaka.
I was going to actually, yes, it's either Shaka because of his MPs, or it's Siam because of the Stampies. They're just so grating, and the AI has improved since Civilization V was released. Oh, no. And it just seems to be that right when they're in that sweet spot for their unique unit that they rush in, and even if they're not going to be able to take cities, it's not usually that, but they're just enough to cause a nuisance, and they're pillaging, and I'm having to push them away, and I'm having to spend time and resources in order to be able to construct military units instead of doing what it is that I want to do, and I have to sacrifice science production and growth, and
I hate those wimpy monger peacenicks. I would be happy if my game only had things like Montezuma and Shaka in it. Just lots of warmongers. Throw in Attila, throw in Napoleon. We'll have a nice big fun fest together.
Next on the list, what is each co-host's favorite civ to play as?
Mongolia, lol. Keshiks have been my favorite for pretty much all of my known civ career.
True.
I guess I'm going to go with Byzantium. It is because of pushing for a religion and being able to get that extra belief. So, yeah, I can adopt more buildings up front so I can get pagodas and the mosques. I admit it. I have a problem, and the first step in realizing having a problem is admitting it.
You can stop anytime you want, right?
I could, but...
You won't?
I don't necessarily have my best games playing Byzantium, actually, but
yeah. But
in terms of the favorite to play for that reason, yes, I am a big advocate for founding your own religion and then pushing it at least through your city so you actually get the founder belief benefits. Look at that. I know, right? It's crazy.
So crazy.
I play random so much that I don't know that I really have a favorite civ, but I do like it when in my random it shows up with things like the Maya or Babylon that are really science heavy. I likes my science.
Says the co-host who likes to adopt Messenger of the Gods.
beyond.
Yeah, what a shocker, right?
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
I'll go with the Hypercube for the win.
And Katniss also asks, what is the average elapsed time for each player per, in brackets, successful game? Well, that depends. What do you mean by successful? Does that mean that you win? We actually formally finish a game in Civ 5?
Well, if we're talking in single-player games, I don't know, 8 to 10 hours probably? Because it slows down so much in the later game. But all those unsuccessful games are maybe only a few hours.
Yeah, I'll just go with that so we can go on to a better question.
Yeah, okay.
Oh. Oh, snap.
Sorry. You mean those visiting games for Dan?
Because, of course, that's also a function of map settings. If you're playing on a huge map, yeah, you're going to be there a couple of weeks.
It's going to be a while, yeah. And of course, should Civ 5 have more Civilization DLCs?
Yep, but no Canada.
If it was part of the whole expansion thing, I don't know if I like the piecemeal Civ thing.
See?
People are more likely to pick up the expansion as a pack as opposed to just buy a Civ.
Yeah, there you go. Another reason for another expansion.
Yep.
That's not a good reason. My answer to that is no. We've got enough Civs. Civ 5, we're good.
Yeah, there is a color coding problem at some point here.
Yeah. At some point, we're already there. Which color of green is that?
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Carl 5872. How about some pictures to go with those voices?
How about no?
How about we have pictures?
We do.
Yeah,
have pictures.
I can send you pics, Carl. I can send you pics.
It may not be of his face.
Well, it won't necessarily be of Phil, or at least not of Phil when you want to see Phil. But you know,
it might be of any of us, but we can send pictures.
Look, my picture is already on the Polycast website.
Yes.
A photo of Phil is easy to find otherwise online. Imagine's picture is part of an interview he gave with 2K at E3 this year.
Stop telling people that.
Mackie's photo, however, is a protected commodity that has not and will not be digitized to protect her identity as the only woman on the internet.
Although, if you slip a few things my way, I might be able to make something happen for you there.
No.
Again, this might not exactly be Mackie.
Hey.
He'll just send you something from his prawn collection.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a prawn collection. You're being silly. No way.
I'm sorry, prawn library.
I find it interesting the things that Mackie assumes about me.
That's right, it's Locutus that has the prawn collection, and Phil has the prawn library.
Man, that really puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
And what perspective is that?
Perhaps he meant pictures along the lines of something other than just us, because after all, this is a podcast, so, you know, maybe...
This is a podcast?
Well, it's not... radio show, that's for sure.
Okay, fine. Let's have some pictures. Here's a photo of the mouse that I used to help record the podcast. Here's a photo of the microphone I used to record the podcast.
Here's a photo of the view I usually have from sitting in my bed doing the podcast.
Wait, Mackie's what? Giving photos of her in bed?
No.
I like that's how you extrapolated what? That from what you said.
Yeah.
Like, what would you see right now? You'd see the top of the laptop, you'd see the TV, you'd see my little LED Christmas tree on top of the other computer.
And if you try to zoom in just a little closer on that picture, you might be able to see a certain finger.
Now that would be awesome.
Yeah, I can get you a picture of that.
That would make a pretty good meme picture.
¶¶
that takes us to the end of the 2013 Polycast Christmas special.
Oh.
This is the Man Team, and I wish you all some merry holidays, listeners. And today I was joined by regular co-host Dan Q.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you in 2014.
Makalua.
And, of course, we also wish you a Happy New Year.
And Majin.
Yes, because Dan's a voyeur. He likes looking at his viewers. Hold on. I'll be back.
You don't really want to avoid that commercial, Internet.
And I could have said this to you, Phil, before we started streaming live, but this is much more fun. Can you increase the volume of yourself? I know that's just asking Phil to increase his volume. I understand that, audience. I know.
Can you also get out of the tin can?
I think that that's a questionable request, but... I'm not exactly sure how I can do that off of this rig, unfortunately. I have some technical difficulties, listeners. We'll put it that way.
Well, can you, like, at least yell?
Maybe.
So you are not predictable, Mackie. Oh, very good.
Okay, and what did you think I was going to choose? I'm curious.
I thought you were going to choose the the part about getting the girls back is in 2007, and to point out that we did that last year.
Well, you already pointed it out in the thread.
Yeah, but some people might not, who are listening to this might not actually
read. Yes, the Internet, that's like a once every 5 years thing, and we already did it recently, so you'll have to wait.
Yeah, 2017.
2017? Good God, don't even talk about that yet.
Fine, Mackie, let's talk about 2016 instead.
All right, we'll put everything at Animal Husbandry. Research the very first tech, and you get to do everything you want. I'm fine with whatever.
You even know what we're talking about.
So imagine it's fine with, just as he says, having everything available at Animal Husbandry. Your trade routes can go from one end of the globe to the other, and, yeah, problem solved.
There you go.
Whoa, easy, Dan. And I'm
the
one who has supposedly a bad reputation. Jeez.
Speaking of bad reputations, Majin, can you choose Nostell? Thing is, Majin decided to switch recordings to Wednesday.
Okay.
Decided to start recording the show from Wednesday because they're sponsored.
Yep.
Picks or didn't happen.
Yep.
Speaking of pictures, you could take a screenshot of these questions, such as...
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, look at
painful,
that.
Painful segue.
Purchased Alpha Centauri 2, LOL. I wouldn't mind that, actually.
Did someone say Alpha Centauri?
Sorry, Mackie. I was just making a kind suggestion. I was not actually saying it was happening.
Aww.
I know. I'm sad, too.
That's my developer suggestion. Even if you can't call Alpha Centauri, can you kind of do a spacey thing?
Speaking of walking into things, Phil, what's...
I was about to say that myself. I didn't remember who had gone last because they all commented, so I didn't know who was next in the lineup. But apparently it is me.
Are we done trolling for them? Checking, okay.
Whoa. Why would you even ask that question? What the heck?
Phil is on the call, Mackie.
We're trolling the audience by Phil's just mere presence. Okay, gotcha. Oh, fine. Talk about the Great General Citadel. Someone else reads that stuff now. Oh.
You don't know how to read anymore?
I'll read it just because Mackie wants me to read it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I knew you liked the sound of my voice. A Lucky Strike 77 says... Oh, she's not denying it. She just said...
Phenomena.
Dear. We have too much fun on the show sometimes. Seriously, what's wrong with us? We need to be more serious.
We need to be more professional, right?
Yeah. Recorded December 14th, 2013. Sound clips copyright Take Two Interactive, Mannheim Steamroller, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and Anonymous. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.